people and the views. I assume some other people dealing with the issue of air pollution, and they obtained individual monitors which were, you know, highly portable, and gave them the opportunity to give them to people in the community who could then walk around with them or use them in their home or whatever they would like to. And they are linked to a central system which makes them available both on the smartphone that the individual might have and also available then to the people who coordinate the network. The interesting thing was, and Rick is in the back of the room, last evening John Elmers brought an item that he had downloaded regarding a national program that the EPA is trying to get communities to volunteer to do, which is rather similar to what the people in Dubuque had done and the University of Iowa. And it although I don't remember them talking about a federal grant program starting it, but much more adventuresome than I think we in Rochester might be up to managing. They want to put 200 or 300 of these on the streets and have all sorts of coordinated receipt of the information and various things. Well, you know, we can continue to address it, but I think that there was probably more just in terms of the possibility of doing it in a way that would enable us to perhaps do a much smaller scale than this one from the EPA. If we could, you know, get 20 of these little monitors and make them available to people in the community and do things in terms of monitoring our air pollution. The other thing that was obviously impressive was L. Hunter Lovins from out in Colorado, who was an incredibly inspiring speaker. She was the sort of, I think, keynote exciting person, and talked a lot about what we should be doing in terms of sustainability and how communities should be attempting to address the issues of climate change. The last keynoter was a Dr. Manuel Pastor, who is from University of California, and again was a very interesting guy. And we discovered that, in fact, he has a bunch of stuff on YouTube, but had a lot of statistical information in terms of what's happened to communities and growth. And he talked about the national and state and in Iowa and then all the way down to Dubuque in terms of his statistics, but a very interesting presentation and well worth listening to. So that's sort of where the program went. And we had two guests, and we just lost one to her cell phone, I think. But so perhaps why don't we wait till Kim gets back, and then we can go around and introduce ourselves. Any other commissioners that want to share anything about what has been happening?
I don't know if anyone else attended the Climate Smart Municipalities dinner last night in Minneapolis. The German delegation came to visit, and we had our representatives from Minnesota cities there as well. And we had a very interesting panel Q&A about the experience that the Minnesota delegation had in Germany, and a lot of information was taken there. And I think kind of the two big ahas, at least for me, from the discussion I was hearing was, number one, a lot of focus on the transportation sector, getting people to, you know. But one of the more interesting comments of the night was Blaine Hill, the administrator of the city of Morris was there, and someone asked him, you know, what was your big, you know, what is a big change that you found yourself making after this trip? And he said, well, I take my bike to work every day now. So, you know, just thinking about those changes at the personal level. And the other thing that really came out from, I think, all of the panelists was the importance of partnerships. That, you know, to effectuate culture change, it really needs to be, you really need to get everybody in on the ground floor. And that was something that Germany and members of the German delegation who commented as well mentioned, that it was critical that you get that ground floor involvement such that even a lot of the things that we talk about, you know, renewable energy mandates, et cetera, they don't even think about that because it's so ingrained into the consciousness of all their decision making that they, you know, it's not even, they have to work to think of it as an actual separate policy issue to think about. So that was some very interesting perspectives. And it was nice too to have a smattering of, you know, you had Rochester and Duluth as kind of the big dogs there, but you also had three pretty small communities participating as well. They will be coming to Rochester on Wednesday, and I believe all the commission members were invited to lunch at Assisi Heights, right. And they'll be spending a few hours here. So if you haven't RSVP'd for that already, I'd strongly encourage people to attend.
Okay. There's Michael. Yes, and I think Jeff has sort of covered our public meeting notice in case we do have more than a quorum there. Why don't we continue to wait for Kim to come back in? That's sort of, anyone else?
I attended another McKnight meeting. They brought together all of their various fundies who are basing their work in renewable energy stuff, and it was good because this was sort of the meeting where we decided that there were, you know, a lot of folks who are pursuing much more grassroots kind of efforts in their communities, and then there was sort of a separate contingent of people working on policy. But what was interesting about it was a new, kind of a new batch of folks who were giving some interesting insights based on the recent FERC ruling into how they were approaching municipal and cooperative utilities on their sort of freedom of purchasing potential. I'm not really sure where that's going to go, but I'm still in the group, that's all I'm saying. That's all I have for now. It's an ongoing conversation.
Updates? Nate Stenzel had a project approved on the site of the Wicked Moose. I think it's a very solid project. It's an apartment building principally aimed at the affordable workforce price range. And he's been particularly good to work with. And so what I offered at the meeting is, hey, we've got this PACE program going up and we'd really like to have a good demonstration win. And he was very open to it. We exchanged some emails since then. I think I copied Jeff on a couple of them, but he wasn't actively looking to use PACE, but you know, these type of apartments, they'll put in the, you know, lowest efficiency appliances, and there's probably a lot of things that we can do pretty easily with PACE to up it, and you know, some of these might even become selling points for the development itself. So what we were really looking for is a person who would be willing, because again, he's not actively pursuing it himself, but he's willing to work with us to try it out. So if there's some folks here, and there were some names suggested to me, but I won't put anyone on the spot, that would be willing to maybe take this on and work as a liaison, try and get them going, that'd be good. And I think there's some county staff too that's kind of excited about it.
So in other words, he would involve his engineering staff or whoever is designing his.
I think so. Yeah. You know, and I think it's, you know, it'd be cool to do something like solar or something on there, but in reality, if we just improve the efficiency of all the systems there and the building envelope. And by anyone who's nodding, that's kind of like signing yourself up, so.
Well, and presumably he's working with RPU. I don't know. If he wasn't, yeah.
Well, you know, and part of it too is these projects are so, you know, they're so efficient in how they get done that you know, there's not a lot of thought process that goes in. It's like, here's what meets code, therefore here's what we'll do.
Oh, the engineer just does it.
Yeah, right. And I mean, the energy code is much better than it used to be, but
sure.
You know, it'd be great to, you know, even, you know, find a, you know, $250,000, $500,000 of improvements that we can do through PACE and do that.
Well, and then there is the discussion with the developers out on, you know, next to St. Mary's in terms of the, what they're planning to do with that building in terms of their energy efficient utilities. They were, you know, discussing what a 70% savings just as part of what they were planning on doing without even getting any further into, you know, into being asked to be more energy efficient than that, because they were just used to doing it in Minneapolis. So they were sort of coming down here and saying, well, yeah, this is what we're going to do because that's what we always do. Which would be nice if we had that sort of philosophy down here.
Yes, it would.
So when they talked about PACE originally, one of the issues was it's assessed based on the property value. There shouldn't be issues with that because it's an existing building. They're tearing
well,
it down.
The, it's a new construction. It is new construction, but it's not a nonprofit, so there is you know, there's already going to be taxes assessed. And the biggest issue, I think, on these apartment ones is it takes a little bit of, you got to kind of work with them because typically the tenants are the ones paying the energy bills. Sometimes heating is included, which might make it easier. But if the developer is not directly paying those energy bills themselves, the incentive to save is removed.
Other than as a marketing.
Other than as a marketing, but of course they're going to have affordable housing in Rochester, which... the mere existence of it fills it.
I mean, they will have common areas.
That's true.
Yes,
yeah.
And I think that's
small.
Yeah, I think that's some of the selling points potentially is the common areas, and you know, in some of them they do have like they do have heat included or depending on what kind of system they have in.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening with that one next to the co-op. That's, you know, what is. What's happened there with efficiency and everything. I was just going to say, and it's not this county, but we're having some discussion at Eagle Bluff down in Plainsboro about using the PACE program for a project or two, and you know, even if it isn't Olmsted County or otherwise related to us, at least the word then perhaps we'll get around about the availability of this sort of funding and that.
Well, and I think once the individual projects are approved, it's easily applied to additional apartment buildings.
Sure.
And obviously I have the affordable part is kind of near and dear to my heart, so.
You can sometimes make the case if they put in more efficient appliances, they have purchased more durable and it might reduce their life cycle costs for appliances. Might persuade some people.
Well, and what I keep, you know, trying to convince people that we need to be concerned about, and that is the fact that if they are not putting in energy efficient appliances and that, they are driving up the cost to the renters, and even if they are affordable housing, you still have people obtaining subsidized and supplementary funding from government agencies, so it's costing us tax money if they are not if they're having to pay more for their energy costs and their other utilities. So,
do we have a figure when rents move from affordable to not affordable? Less affordable?
Inaffordable.
The technical definition is that we typically use is 60% of CONY median income, and it depends on the size of the unit, but basically you're talking $650 for a studio, $750 for a one-bedroom, $950 for a two-bedroom, and whether or not that's actually affordable to people depends on the individual cases.
Sure. But we're not seeing units going in for even 1,000.
No, they did, well, and these are the exception. And there's a huge market for it.
Okay, why don't we back up, since we now have our guests in attendance, and go quickly around the table with commissioner introductions, and then entertain any public comments that our guests might have. And I guess I can start. Ray Schmitz, I'm the chair and member of the Rochester community.
Jeff Ellerbush, planning department.
Steve Soltis, board member.
Ryan Morgan, board member.
Kelly O'Maro, member.
Anna Ritchie, vice chair.
Corey Rubin, member.
Edward Cohen, member.
Steve Nias, ex officio member.
Michael Wojak, interested citizen member.
If you'd like to introduce yourself, and if you have any comments you'd like to make, this is your opportunity to do that.
Hi, I'm Kim Norton, current state representative, soon to be citizen at large, interested in energy and environment issues.
Yay. Rick Morris, also a citizen. I work for the Sierra Club on some energy issues. I was really interested to hear the updates from the conference down in Iowa. Glad to hear that. And I'll also put in a quick note that sometime soon the DMC design guidelines will come up and be presented to the city council. And there's a lot of really great energy conservation points in there. Chief among them, using the SB 2030 design guidelines, so that buildings built this year would have to be 70% more efficient, and every year they'd have to be more efficient until net zero in 2030. So if you haven't checked those out, I would be delighted to talk more about them with you and their importance for our city.
Michael, Rick didn't go into the weeds on this, but part of the discussion, I think, you know, at the Sierra Club last evening was, okay, these have come from DMC and have been approved by their board, as I understand it. No? Okay. Update us on exactly where they are.
These have come from the University of Minnesota Design Center.
Right.
On behalf of DMC and the City of Rochester. They were submitted to the city and DMC in draft form. The city and DMC have sent back some comments, specifically dealing with some issues that we've already hit, like what happens if you want to do a taller building on the tall building zone, how do you apply these outside of the DMC district. They are currently working on those revisions, and they will come back to both the committee meeting for the city and to the DMC board meeting.
Okay.
And are these the ones, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm, please.
Weren't these the ones at the McKnight Foundation also? Or is that separate? Because
well,
the McKnight
I think
Foundation did a plan for DMC.
The McKnight Foundation was the energy plan.
Okay.
And this is actually the design guidelines for like urban
okay.
design principles.
So those are separate.
Which are actually, they're very closely related. I mean,
okay.
you know, south-facing windows is good for both design and energy. So. And if you have a hard time keeping plans straight, join the rest of us.
So in other words, in terms of Rick's idea that there will be people going to a meeting and supporting them, maybe we aren't ready for that. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any other comments from the guests, questions?
Well, I might just comment that I've been in contact with Gary Newman about some of the building designs. Michael, I haven't had a chance to talk with you, but I am concerned about, I hesitate to use the term violating because that's pretty strong,
yeah.
but do workarounds to the plans that are not yet quite adopted, thereby setting a precedent that would be really hard to come back on later on. And I know there's a real push between getting some projects off the ground and started, because the city is, you know, carrying the brunt a lot financially for some stuff that they could certainly use that state infrastructure money for. And so they want something done so that that money can start flowing, and I understand that. On the other hand, I'm very concerned with setting a precedent that'll be hard to walk back from for future
and
projects.
We could talk about this one all night.
Why don't you let me know? I did share those concerns.
Yeah,
with you.
And what I would say is that I've heard those concerns in two different circumstances. One where we're actually violating plans, and one where people think that we're violating plans, but we're not. And, you know, and the two examples are, there's clearly a lot of issues with the Miracle Mile project. The Lattice project, on the other hand, completely complies with everything. So, and I've heard that concern on both of them, and in one case it's valid. So it's a valid concern, and I think we do, our 1976 comprehensive plan is not serving us well.
Right, and I guess there's the city plan, and then there's the DMC plan. They're similar but not the same, and so I think that complicates it even further. Because I'm not sure the Miracle Mile plan is part of the DMC plan, is it? That's just city.
Mm-hmm. I think that's out of the district at this point, isn't it?
Sorry.
The Miracle Mile's out of DMC, technically.
It's out of DMC. It's in the 2nd Street corridor. It should be in DMC. It should certainly have windows.
But I think the question that we're basically raising is that if some of the initial projects that eventually do get DMC funding, when that happens, if they are not required to carry the same energy responsibilities and design features because it would make them not viable projects, I mean, that's the thing that they're weighing at this point. They want to get something in the ground. They have projects that they're negotiating with the folks. If they throw on some additional costs, the performers don't work anymore, so maybe the project doesn't work. But the risk is, if you do that now, what will happen to projects in the future that will come with the same.
Right, and that's a conversation Gary and I had, and I totally understand that, except builders and developers around the state, up in the Twin Cities in particular, are able to do these kinds of things. And we have developers here who aren't willing to do those kinds of things and have it be part of their initial proposal. Don't come in with something that doesn't fit and then get mad because you're not approved. Mm-hmm. Come in with something that fits initially, or don't come in at all. Yeah. And I think if we don't draw that line early, that's kind of my point, is if we don't draw that line early, we're gonna have this fight for every project because they got it and I didn't. And I know it's a challenge. I'm just saying I'm concerned about it, and I shared those concerns with Gary.
Good.
Thank
you for doing
that.
Yeah.
It does sort of beg the question, why can things be done throughout the country but not in Rochester?
Tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking at our agenda, which has sort of gotten all mushed together, if I could describe it that way, whatever mushed means. One of the things that we hoped was going to happen is the addition of a sustainability staff person to either the city or to the joint planning department staff. I'm sure that most of you have heard the comments that came back from the public works director, that the city administrator was not willing to put the staff position in as a funded position, and apparently was being asked to put it in as an unfunded position in hopes that we might find funding. Putting it in the agenda in part was to discuss people's ideas about where we could find the funding for this position through projects. And that gets us to item C. And also part of what was another one of the panel presentations down in Dubuque, and that is the savings that have accrued to communities down in Iowa, the one who presented in particular, from the movement to LED street lamps. And the review that was, or the proposal that was put on the table by the staff that that were here, the graduate students that were here, contains a rather significant level of savings if the city were, and because RPU is the vendor who provides the street lamps and charges the city, if we could move to LED street lamps, they were suggesting there was something in the area of $300,000 a year in terms of costs of electricity and maintenance and all the other things that go into keeping street lamps working, as well as the possibility of aid from other sources if we did improve our energy efficiency. And that was the thing that was emphasized by the community that was doing the presentation down there, was that while they had some issues surrounding funding, they have at this point proceeded with a third of their lamps and are on schedule to go, you know, with the other two-thirds of the street lamps in the community in the next year to bring them into 100% LED street lamps. And I was kind of hoping, as I indicated in the agenda, if RPU could give us a little update on what RPU's attitude toward that is, in hopes that the savings in electric costs to the city might then flow back in terms of sustainability staff.
I talked with our core services director just before coming over here, because I wasn't quite clear on what that agenda item was about. But it was explained to me that the actual street lights are owned by the city, by Public Works, and Public Works has the budget for that stuff. And RPU does the street light maintenance basically because we have the bucket trucks to do it. And my understanding is that if one of the non-LED street lights goes out and it, you know, explodes, it takes out the entire fixture, it's a matter of RPU policy that we'll replace that entire fixture with an LED and then bill that back to Public Works. But if it's just the bulb that goes out and it's just the standard maintenance, the bulb being replaced, that's really within the purview of Public Works to determine whether that should be an LED or just a replacement of the kind that's there. So maybe it's clear as mud, but basically, you know, we have the trucks that we do the fixing and the replacement, but what goes in there is really within the purview of Public Works.
Okay.
And so, dollars that go with it.
So if in fact we wanted to proceed to an agency to talk about replacement, we better go back to the city then, Michael.
Well, this is where that streetlight utility thing that we discussed, and some folks in the community were yelling at us because it was a new tax.
True.
but one of the issues in terms of RPU did these rate studies, and are the rates set to cover things? And one of the rates that don't currently cover the actual cost is street utility lighting. I think we're bringing in like 1.2 million from the city, and the actual cost is like 1.6 or something like that. Okay, and he's nodding, so that's close enough.
depending on you, Michael.
Yeah, but so there's a little bit of a hesitancy to jump right into that too, because the first thing the city would want to do is, you know, RPU would want to charge the city that additional $400,000 per year. Maybe 5 or 6 months ago, I had asked RPU just for the financial analysis on this, you know, are we truly better off letting these other ones run through their life and changing them out, or are we better off changing them out? I've always been a believer in the latter, but staff had indicated they looked at it and they felt that that was not the correct decision. So I think that they should be coming back to us at some point here with that analysis, and I see you're jotting it down.
Yep.
So we'll ask about it at the next RP board meeting maybe. But the hard part too is the savings are backloaded heavily, and it's not just the energy side, it's the labor side. And by doing all these switch outs early on, you substantially ramp up those front-end labor costs, but they all but go away later on. So you've got these long-term energy and labor savings offset by this huge upfront cost. So it's not as easy as it might seem.
And yet there are companies who have the fiscal and technical wherewithal to be contracted.
Yeah, that's why I'm interested in seeing the financial analysis, because ultimately, if there's a case for a third-party business to do it, there's usually a much more cost-effective business case for the city to do it, because they do all the same stuff we do and get a profit.
Well, particularly if RPU were doing it, and that does belong to us also. This was one of the comments or one of the discussion items at the seminar, and this was a much smaller community, but it was a community where the people who did the maintenance of the lights were city employees, and you know, one of the things they said was that this allows us not to, I think they were talking about having to replace retiring employees, and they said, well, this allows us not to replace those employees, which gives us, you know, an almost immediate significant savings, because they you know, that's a cost that goes on for a long period of time. And obviously they were paying, I forget who the utility was that was charging them for electricity, but that is, again, a savings that we would be accruing here, even if we're getting a bargain on, and why, as a ratepayer, why RPU is subsidizing the city and the charging for electric rates, I think we ought to inquire about that, you know. It seems unfair to the rest of us ratepayers. But anyway.
But we're also subsidizing residential rates.
Well, that's all right. I wasn't complaining about that.
We're on this 5-year trajectory towards balancing these rates with the actual costs.
So we can anticipate getting more information in the relatively near future.
I'll ask around and see what we can find out.
Yeah.
I mean, this somewhat informs the discussion, but not really. But I just pulled the 2015 electric operations report, just to give people an idea. What it lists here, not counting rented street lights. Of the non-LED streetlights, there are about 7,700 around the city, which is a decrease of 106 from the year before. And in terms of LED streetlights, there are 969 in 2015, which was an increase of 325 from the year before. So the numbers aren't where we want them to be, but they're definitely moving in the right direction.
So their LEDs are going into new subdivisions, which means the difference. But of course, at this point, that I think the reason I raised it is the possibility of, if we were able to find savings in replacing LEDs, can that funding then flow to the sustainability coordinator? And I would hope that you know, we might be able to somehow talk about that, Michael.
Yes.
Well, that just being one of the many saving opportunities that could flow.
And frankly, I think that just getting rid of the demand charges is probably a more immediate financial payback than, you know, the LEDs.
Does the demand hurt you, though, because you're only turning them on at night?
Well, not on these ones, but separate building demand charges are eating up some of the...
That part, yeah. It seems to me like the sustainability coordinator could be single-handedly paid for by the work they do.
Yes.
As long as somebody was willing to watch the accounting and understand that there's going to be a lag on it.
I spent 2 hours with the city administrator last week explaining that very point, and I believe he agrees.
Okay.
All right, so there is some encouragement, hopefully.
Isn't that assuming that this coordinator, whatever job that they do, goes through, there is some...
Oh, yes, that's the assumption.
With all this bureaucracy, is anything actually going to happen? So will there actually be a savings?
And the preliminary tax levy increase is 11%. which would maybe fund 10 or so positions out of a recommended 30. So it's a challenge, but you know, there seems to be a couple council members.
I'm not familiar with all the grants that are out there. To me, this seems more a way to get it started or seeded is with some type of external funding source, not based on.
His ears were perking up.
I was taking notes.
But not really based on a perceived savings, because that may not be the way to go or to get it started, because there's nothing there to start with. I mean, the lighting, I don't see that.
It's really a chicken and an egg situation.
Yeah.
There's some grants that,
chicken, by the way,
that the city could apply for now, but there's an enormous pool of funding opportunities for which we can't even apply until we have some persons sitting in a seat with that kind of a title.
Yeah.
And forgive me, but were we going to have, I thought that we might have a draft available soon for a letter of support for
the appropriate faith
for the sustainability position.
That was discussed.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we discussed that at the last meeting. Yeah. So.
My apologies.
No, it's I do think it's this is.
If I was tasked with that, I missed my.
Well, task. And I don't.
Yeah,
but
we can do
that.
That
was,
sure, we can certainly do that.
I think it is timely, and
I think
I think we should get it now, as the city administrator is currently making recommendations. And the other part too is the 11% levy increase is offset by a 9% increase in city valuation. So,
what's the most strategic path for a letter of recommendation to take to whom? To all city council? To just the administrator?
I publish the letters and recommendations at a council meeting and write it to the mayor, council, community. Explaining why this should be one of the top priorities, and get as many co-signers as possible.
Individuals, organizations, anybody?
Well, I think I actually mean in terms of city staff. You know, I think that you know, besides this group, if we can get, I think that BPAC people would sign on to this because they're in this transition period and they need somebody to staff them in the future. I think that CUED would sign on to this as well. We could see if we could check with RPU.
Neighborhood Association.
Waiting until you leave the room.
Yeah. but the idea is just you know, at least those three groups. And you know, and I think part of it is just highlighting what the opportunities are, because this should be a
attach numbers to those.
Yeah, as much as possible.
Let me suggest this. I looked at the minutes from the last meeting. I don't find anything where there was a motion. As I said,
no,
I may have dropped the ball in preparing a letter, but I don't see that the commission is on record as approving a recommendation to the city council. Can I ask for a motion to do that?
Moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. So now I will put together a letter and we will send it off to the council so that it gets further into your budget discussions.
Yeah, I think last month it didn't get in because it wasn't on the agenda, so there was some technical reason.
Well, and I think we were still really waiting last month for some of the stuff to come filtering up from Matus and the other intern. I'm not sure that was entirely. I'm not sure we had official documents and stuff
did,
like
did
that.
Did this board receive a copy of
difference.
That report?
Mm-hmm. From the interns?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and that's been disseminated.
I knew I had seen it, but I didn't remember who I saw it from.
Yeah.
We had also talked about breaking their reports down into appropriate categories and individually or in small groups taking on those various mm-hmm. categories to turn it into a short list of bullet points.
Yeah.
Or, you know, action items, whatever.
If the city ends up being uninterested in a sustainability coordinator, especially if they're worried about finding grant funding year in and year out to pay for it, would they consider going to a private party to get the work done like they've done with JCI in the past where there's an obvious payback? noting that the EDF fellows specifically laid out, like, here's a project, go do this, it will save you X dollars. It almost seems like that's a blocking and tackling, go give it to somebody.
I would think that the case is compelling enough that I don't want to open that option necessarily at the front end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not rocket science. This decision should be
incredibly
easy. But the only people that could screw it up is a bunch of politicians.
So. Which is why I ask, if the politicians follow through on that screwing up of things, then...
Well, then we go to plan B.
Gotcha.
Well, just to insert something else into the discussion, we... as part of CERTS, I was part of a tour up in Red Wing and Ed was there, talked about the steps that Red Wing has taken in terms of the community there. They basically had a sustainability coordinator for 20 years, Ed. How long has that guy had that position?
They talked about when they started doing their energy audits in the 80s.
Yeah.
Which would have been fuel cost.
30 years ago. And they've put, you're looking like that.
No. I know quite a few people in Red Wing City government. I was wondering if you caught the name.
Oh. He just retired as the head of their public works department.
Yeah.
Jeff, Phil, somebody like
that. How's that position funded?
Pardon?
How's that position funded?
Well, he sort of built the position himself, and he, justified it based on savings. They have, and some of this has happened to me, they did what you're supposed to do. They built in the initial savings into what they were doing in the buildings. They gradually installed at that point compact fluorescence. They did their due diligence in terms of sealing up their buildings and doing more efficient things with their HVAC systems and those sorts of things, all as part of their ongoing budget process for lo these many years. And what the most dramatic thing that happened most recently is, of course, they have gotten involved with some of the solar programs from vendors, where they now have in the parking lot at their public works building and in between the historic buildings as part of their government center, the city hall and the fire station, and they have put awning-type solar panels up. Carport sort of things that are generating electricity. He talks about the fact that they are producing more power than their public works building uses now.
So are these all projects that would not have happened if there wasn't a coordinator?
Got that impression.
Yes.
They also used the savings in kind of a cascading.
CFLs wouldn't have happened.
Somebody has to precipitate that decision to, we're going to put in, it's one thing to screw in a CFL, it's another thing to rewire their fluorescence and do all the other things. And he, the way he described it, and maybe he was, sort of inflating his own resume, but, certainly the impression was that he was kind of the selling force to the city council and the other people up there.
To a direct question on that point, he did say that I'm not using his words, their city leadership was leaning in on these things. They saw the opportunities and didn't waste them. And as the cost savings accrued, they would then allocate those savings to fund a next project. So they were cascading, snowballing, whatever the term is, kind of like a green fund, although I don't remember him actually using that term. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, he clearly said that they were feeding the savings back into more projects because he said they had to wait for some of the projects because it might take them 2 years of savings to pay for the next step that they had to make in terms of replacing windows or
Could that be used as a case study, the argument to this letter, whatever, to the council?
And he would be perfectly happy to venture down here to talk to us, and I, you know, I think we should probably look to
anyone
to doing
council,
that.
Really?
Yeah.
The solar was made possible, as Ray said, originally it was going to take a couple of years to get the funds, but the provider of the solar came back and said, we have a company who's willing to take the depreciation and the tax benefits, and we'll basically pay for it. Mm-hmm. And what the city ended up only paying for was the superstructure to create the carports and the, you know, the overhead, and that was their only cost. And I counted, one of the carports held 12, the other had 26.
Yeah.
So these were pretty good size, and the employees loved parking under them in the winter and the summer.
Except he said when the snow load was then sliding off the panels and falling onto the
car. There was a few places they knew not to park the second year.
Yes. And the interesting thing was that as this project for the county came into being, suddenly the school district discovered that they had a large amount of non-productive green space back on the back end of their high school building, the location, which turned out to be just ideal for putting up a fairly large solar array, which is you know, projected to produce all sorts of savings going into the future for them, and really is just using land that, you know, had no particular value to them. It simply had been part of the purchase when they originally built their new school on the edge of town. So all sorts of things began to happen because people would see these things and say, well, what can the school do? And this, of course, you know, Xcel, the interesting thing is the rep from Xcel was sitting there during the discussion, and very much, you know, their solar program is very much part of what was going on with this whole system. So there are things happening out there which Rochester should be, we should be picking up on. The other thing that we put on the agenda in terms of projects that we need to attempt to try to bring to completion is the question of what do we do with our report to the City Council on garbage collection. And that was raised again, I think, at the Sierra Club last evening. And
so I was supposed to have something to everybody, but I didn't get it. But
okay.
I got it done, but it's here, not in your hands. So I basically took what I looked at last year on energy and emissions evaluation and just put it on a report. Then I created a report that kind of, just a two-page thing. I looked at the kind of three pieces we had looked at, the effects of heavy vehicles, the energy and greenhouse gas savings, and then the consumer survey and kind of analysis of the potential cost savings, which we never really got a good conclusion from, but it's still, we evaluated it, we have some survey results and some information. Kind of took those three pieces, and that's kind of the argument to bring to council, I guess, in terms of district calling. So that's this document, kind of in draft form. So I figure just open that up for comments, and if there's comments, we can look at it, change it, and provide it to the council for recommendation.
Jeff, could I ask that you make us some copies and get
I sent it to Jeff. He can just forward it to you, but I didn't send it until just before
that's
the
fine.
All right,
so that's
you
fine.
Can send it.
I can still send it to you.
Yeah, perhaps Jeff could send it around. And when would you think that we could get this on the committee of the whole's agenda, Michael?
Or is that the best way?
Well, it's going to be November, December.
Oh, I'm assuming that.
Yeah. But it should come back, and I mean it's just. Again, the data clearly indicates what the correct decision is, so
sure.
We got to give us the opportunity to make the right decision.
So that first one's what I looked at, and the second one is, I looked at a part of it, and the other part was the public works report and the.
Question for you, Kelly. In this survey,
The Germans are down here tomorrow.
Part of the work that I
oh
what
did what
tomorrow
Michael.
Tomorrow and Thursday.
We'll double check.
They'll be here tomorrow, all day tomorrow.
Wednesday the 12th. Yeah.
Yeah. Lunch up at the CCIs.
Lunch.
Mm-hmm. You're probably invited.
Yes.
Sometimes they just show up.
Does
decisions are out of my hands.
Does that survey
Michael
talk about
always read his
the range that individual homeowners are paying?
So I put the chart, there's a chart in there of what that the current Rochester range is. But comparing, you know, like we talked about with John, is comparing it to other cities, is we just haven't been able to get that information. You know, it's out there and it's possible to get that put together. It's just
more involved. I'm not proposing that we try and quantify it to other cities, but the startling thing for me was for the same, using the same hauler, for the same size containers, the enormous range of prices that people were paying. From, you know, from an equity standpoint or fairness or whatever.
That chart's not in there. What's in there is the cost, the average cost of each hauler, medium, large, and.
So Michael left, but I just wonder if that sort of information, I can get you that data if it's worth doing and you have the time.
Yep, so once you get a chance to review it, if you want to add anything that you think is valuable. And
the survey is interesting.
I can't speak for Michael, but, you know, sort of
7% rule.
Classically,
so they can be
I won't look at Kim. Sort of classically, that is the sort of populist argument that sometimes appeals to decision makers, because it you know, it's an elevator speech. You know, they can say, well, we need to do this because there are these wildly disparate rates that are being imposed on people by the haulers, and we want to stabilize that. So I think. Let me suggest that since Michael sort of indicated that we're talking about being in November or December before we get to the Committee of the Whole, why don't we review Kelly's submitted materials, plan on adding the results of Ed's survey regarding what people are actually paying, and be prepared to approve something at the November meeting. Is that fair?
This has the billing on it. It doesn't look. I don't see numbers, but they're bars. They don't look too different.
There should be numbers on there.
Just the bars. I mean, tiny, right?
Do you have the reports?
No, this is not what Ed.
All three reports.
What Ed is talking about is the fact that
background.
If you and I are getting
within
the same city.
Yeah, we're getting. It's like flying on the airline with the guy next to you is paying. You know, 80% of what you're paying, or half of what you're paying. This is, you can do the same thing with your garbage haulers.
Official version.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, and I got over 400 responses, so it's on the edge of being valid. But of course, they're all self-selected. Still,
The surveys was valid. What wasn't valid was the cost comparisons.
Yes.
To different cities, because there are such different.
Well, we don't know what
structures.
Also, we don't know what degree of subsidizing
yep,
being done.
Yeah, because all the rate structures
yeah.
are different, so it's basically you're comparing costs of, you didn't know what to what. You know.
It just so happened that all the cities that had an organized system, people paid less. But why they paid less,
yep,
we don't know.
Okay, we will then anticipate talking about that at the November meeting. Any other new, Ed, I think you had at least one other new item that you wanted to raise.
Well, two things were getting recommendations, both for sustainability coordinator and for street lighting,
mm-hmm.
to the city council in whatever sequence and method made the most impact.
Right.
And we talked about that. And I don't know, Anna, you saw the list of items. Can you recall anything that all the people who can pull up emails at a snap of a finger?
I'm terrible. I know what I sent Ray, which was just that I'm going to start actually putting together some kind of promotional piece to sort of replace or to be in addition to our current brochure for after the city council hopefully approves the energy action plan, something that we can take around that talks about sort of the top line objectives, that kind of thing, so we have something that's a little more timely to be distributing. So I'm going to be starting to work on that. If anybody wants to help me, I'm always open to that.
That was a question. The one question, Jeff, is how many of those brochures do we have left? 10,000 or?
Oh. No, but.
We printed it, what, a couple thousand?
Yeah, I suppose we have half of them.
I took a bunch down to Dubuque, I know that.
Oh, good.
I said, you know, where can I put this? Do you have a table for attendees to put? And they said, oh, we never thought of that.
In this letter, and of course you want to keep it to one page and, you know, a lot of white space, recommending the sustainability coordinator, do we just pull from the EDF fellows report? Do we tap Steve to give us some good data from V3 to show some opportunities there? You know, what's the most compelling case you can make with bullet points, I guess is where I'm going. And that's where the end of the discussion.
Yeah.
Because we got a lot of data. And
Edward, your other suggestions pertain to PACE. If I assume John was here, if he could talk about any other initiatives happening in the county. And the other was for Brett, and he's not here, so that won't know.
We at least know we've got this Eastgate thing happening, and you know, we've got a lot of talented people in here to approach Michael and volunteer. I volunteered. So thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, the question obviously is do we put the arguments in the letter, or do we, you know, send the letter to the council and you know, request the opportunity to make a presentation concerning the sustainability coordinator.
Well, he made it very clear, letters and petitions.
Yeah.
So one or more of our officers or whomever is going to be standing up there making the case?
Well, and get something from CUED and something from
BPAC.
BPAC, which I don't even know what it is, but that's all right.
We can certainly get the chair to sign on.
BPAC is the bicycle people.
Yes.
Oh, all right. That's what their name is. Sorry.
And what was the third group? It'll be in the notes. But
yeah.
I didn't catch the third one. I figured you guys were the third.
We have our recording going?
RPU.
RPU. Oh, yeah. We're volunteering RPU. That's right. An RPU.
What am I volunteering for?
Hot seat.
Writing a letter of support for the sustainability coordinator.
Okay.
Right.
Well, at least signing on to it. I mean, the question of getting those other groups, they're groups too. They're not going to, they have to take it to their.
Right. All those things have to happen.
To their boards. I mean, I think it's a pretty, that throws time on yours.
Yes.
In your system here.
You need to act pretty darn fast. Thinking about the city budget cycle.
Yeah, we're better off getting our letter written and to them, I think, than waiting for CUED to have a meeting and BPAC to have a meeting, and even if Ed could impact that. And anyway, we can at least get it started.
Yep.
Any other new items for the good of the organization?
I don't know if this fits under discussion or administrative or both, but we should probably talk about the date of our next meeting because it's election day, the 8th. It's supposedly the next meeting we have, so we should maybe talk about moving that.
Is anyone working?
Not election day, our meeting.
Do we have any poll workers?
If nobody cares, then it's fine.
I don't think you can hold a meeting.
Technically,
the law says
you can't have a meeting
before
polls close of elected bodies. I don't know whether that extends to
SB caucus. I don't either.
It is
election.
But you might as well not do it.
I just will not do it.
Yeah, I mean, if we could move it to the next day or something instead, or if we can I'm just thinking people have to leave work to vote and then leave work possibly early for a meeting. It kind of creates a conflict.
At a certain time, there's no state list.
Does anybody have any particular preference in your class in the evening?
Week before and the day after would be the logical thing, right?
Yeah. Week before is the first, obviously.
Oh, we could move it up a whole week or we could shift by a day. Either what would people prefer?
It's all good to me.
I think I have a conflict the week before.
So do I.
Okay, week after is the 15th. Or as I say, we could do it either the 7th or the 9th.
There's a lot of stuff we want to get done at our next meeting, it sounds like. It might be best if we can to keep it in that second week.
Okay. I would vote for the 9th myself.
I'm okay.
It's Wednesday.
Anyone have a problem with the 9th at the same time?
Sounds good to me.
I'm good.
All right, I'm moving my calendar.
Me too.
Do you want to have a motion?
I have to write it down.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a smartphone.
My computer has now been amended.
No 9?
Yeah.
Good.
Will you post it somewhere so Rick will know I can't come on the 9th, but he won't know about the
change? Oh, dear. Well, he'll get...
Don't tell Mike either.
He'll get a notice.
Okay. Somebody want to just make a motion?
Somebody doesn't tell Mike.
Change it.
You know who that comes back to?
I move to change the official date of our November meeting to November 9th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. All right, same time, same place. Can we get this room, Jeff? Do you know?
Well, that's what we'll have to find
out.
Yeah,
we'll have to find out.
Same bad channel.
Yeah. Hopefully we can get this room, even if we can't drink the water.
To 30 seconds.
Okay. Anything else? I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you. Enjoy the rather pleasant fall weather.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it will not do horrible things.
Such things.